Hey, what's up, Triniacs? Today's episode of the podcast is brought to you by our first ongoing sponsor, Health IQ.
Woohoo! Thanks, yeah. Health IQ.
They are a life insurance company that offer active people like us, Triniacs, as much as a 25% savings on life insurance, which really just makes too much sense, right? Because with traditional life insurance, us healthy people are basically subsidizing the cost of insurance for the unhealthy people in that life insurance plan. And being a recovering investment advisor myself from a former life, that was actually legitimately always something that kind of irked me.
That ticked you off.
It ticked me off.
I throw
my suit on the ground and I hated it. If you want to learn more, go to healthiq.com/triathlonterran. That's where they put all the triathlete specific info for Health IQ, and it'll let Health IQ know how awesome us Triniacs and this podcast are. Today's guest is Ben Fuqua.
Fuqua.
Fuqua. Yes, Ben is not our average guest. He doesn't own a big fancy triathlon company. He's not a triathlon pro. He is a member of Team Everyman Jack, the men's personal care product line. And he is an awesome, awesome, badass age group triathlete. Now, Ben didn't necessarily start out that way. He actually started out his first few races. He did a 6:34 half Ironman and a 14-hour Ironman. However,
he shaved a lot of time off.
As he puts it, he shaved an entire Lord of the Rings movie worth of time off of his time. He now sports a 4:13 half Ironman personal best and a top 10 American, overall American, in Kona placing. And he did it only training 5 days a week. Yes. What do you think about that, NTK?
I think you should get on his plan.
Yeah, 5 days a week. He knows what it's like to not have his weekends crushed by swimming and biking and running.
Yes, we talked to him about that and Everyman Jack, the team, what the heck is that? We talk about that and a whole lot of other fun stuff with Ben Fuqua.
Fuqua.
Fuqua. It's fun to say and hard to spell.
Fun to say, good guy to interview. Fuqua.
Fuqua.
Enjoy. All right, ladies and gentlemen, Triniacs of all ages, we are here with Ben Fuqua. How'd I do there?
You did great.
I did great?
Yeah, it was awesome.
Awesome. Right on. So, Ben, welcome to the podcast. You,
thank you.
You raced very successfully in Austin. Apparently, we passed each other a couple times, and I photobombed a few of your teammates' shots. How did that race go for you?
You know, I can't complain too much. I mean, I did well. I got second in my age group.
Which age group is that?
30 to 34.
Okay.
The shark tank.
That is a tough group.
Yeah. I got second in my age group and I had the third fastest amateur run overall. I was happy with that, but
Honestly, what were you, like 120 low?
121.
121?
I was a little disappointed, though. Honestly, I felt really just flat, honestly, the whole race. obviously, it was super cold that morning.
What is it in Fahrenheit? I knew what it was in Celsius.
Yeah, it was like 36 when I got to transition, which is 4 degrees above freezing. Then I think I heard that when I started, which is right at the beginning of the age group start, it was like 39. And when I got out of the water, it was 40.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it was as soon as I got my wetsuit ripped off my body, I felt like I was in a freezer and started shaking. And I mean, on the bike, it was crazy. Like, it was the coldest I've ever been working out ever before. I mean, I was freezing cold.
Did you end up doing anything in T1 to bundle up? Like, I'm built for this. And in T1, said, you know what? Like, I'm abandoning 2 minutes and I'm putting on a jacket and gloves and booties and that's it.
Well, see, that's the thing. Like, I talked to some of my friends that were there who are also pretty, you know, competitive, and I'm like, man, I can't give up too much time. And so I just put on socks and some throwaway gloves, and that's it. Just because I didn't think I could give up time, which, you know, I mean, giving up 1 or 2 minutes can be a lot. And so I just was super cold on the bike. My legs felt like crap and couldn't feel my feet. And usually, you know, like in a race, I don't know, 5 or 10 miles in, you have that feeling of like your legs kind of opening up and feeling like, okay, like this is better. I feel good. Let's go. And I just never felt that the whole ride. It was the slowest bike ride I've had in a while too. I was just like, man, I just feel like crap. I was five minutes slower than my bike split at that race 2 years ago. And so that was disappointing. And I still ran well. I still ran a 121, but I couldn't feel my feet the whole time. Like literally the whole race, I could not feel my feet until about 20 minutes after I finished. So that was rough.
What did you think was going on with that bike? I had a similar thing. I was looking for about a 230, ended up doing a 243, but power was exactly where we wanted it to be, my coach and I. Heart rate was bang on, so it wasn't like I was having a crap day, but the speed was just slow.
Yeah, I mean, the roads are rough. I mean, you saw. I think that was my sixth time doing Austin. And so I knew, you know, what to expect as far as the roads being super rough and lots of turns, and it's hard to keep your momentum going on that course. But man, I don't know. I don't know if it was the same for you. I just did not have any like fire or pop in my legs at all.
Yeah,
and
same thing.
I felt like it was very unlike me, because I'm a very competitive person and especially a competitive racer. And at about mile like 25, I started having feelings of like, I don't want to be here. this sucks. Like, what would quitting feel like? You know, all of those kind of negative thoughts. And that was never an option. I wasn't going to quit, but just having those thoughts go through my mind was not normal. Cause I just felt miserable. And then I looked behind me and I had like six guys drafting on me, and stood up and started, you know, giving them some choice words about drafting. And then one of the guys told me to shut my mouth and ride my bike.
Is this a common thing in Austin? Cause I had a similar situation. I was talking to another podcaster, who will go unnamed because he said some choice words about Austinites. And he says that there are a lot of really aggressive Austin athletes down there that like, they just think their shit doesn't stink and they race so aggressively. And
one of them
really
threw a banana at Terry.
Yeah, one dude threw a banana at me, like literally not off to the side in the ditch, threw it in behind him after passing me 10 feet later.
No, I don't know. I lived in Austin for 7 years. And honestly, all the Austin people that I know that live down there are great, including two of my teammates. Honestly, the guy who yelled at me, I kind of got psycho and like looked his number and I was like, I'm remembering that number. And
do you want to let it out right now? Because we'll sick the trainiacs on him.
Yeah,
no, he's from Utah. And he's a former professional triathlete, which was disappointing also, because I'm like, wow. So a former pro is telling me to shut my mouth and ride my bike. So, and then another guy was a dude in my age group. They're both from my age group, from Mexico. So that honestly was the best thing that could have happened for me, because it kind of lit a fire under me. And I told myself like out loud, I am not getting beat by two cheaters in my age group. I just let them, I stood up, like I literally stood up, stretched my back out. They kind of got in front of me and then they slowed down and I'm like, what the hell? Like you're going to draft off me and then I'm going to let you go by because I don't want to cheat. And then you all sit up because nobody's doing the work for you. And so that pissed me off again. And so I just put my head down and I'm like, I'm done with this. And so, like I said, it kind of lit a fire under me and I kind of took off and I was like, I am not getting beat by these guys. And that kind of focused me for the last 20 miles of the ride. And I saw both of them, you know, it's a 3-lap run. And so I would see where they were at the turnarounds. And I was like, I'm getting further and further ahead of you every time. Like I was so pissed. And so I beat both of them, which I was really happy about, because that whole interaction was really disappointing.
But you know, I like that story, and I think it's a good story to hear for newer triathletes, many of whom listen to this podcast, because it just kind of goes to show, number one, adversity doesn't have to ruin your race. And number two, adversity can actually fuel your race, and you can take those things and use them, even though you were already having those thoughts of, oh my God, I think I might want to quit, you know, whatever, those thoughts that you didn't normally have. Instead, you took something that could actually have made you say, that's it, I'm done. And you said, no, forget it. I'm not, like, these guys aren't beating me. And you used it, which I think is a really good message and a good lesson to hear about.
Yeah, I mean, it was, and like I said, I wasn't going to quit, but I think like having those negative thoughts go through my head were weird, because I'm just not, I usually get so amped and pumped to race. And God, I just think the cold just did a number on me where I was just miserable. And yeah, that incident definitely kind of was able to give me some kind of spark for the last, you know, 2 or so hours of the race, which was nice.
Welcome to Canadian racing, my man.
Yeah. Yeah. But like I told you, man, I am still sore. I mean, what is 8, 9 days later? I cannot remember being this sore after a half Ironman in years, maybe ever, but that race beat the crap out of me.
There's something about that day that made it so incredibly tough. Well, it was weird. The med tent after was carnage, and they were saying like everyone's coming into the med tent for some serious stuff. I was in there for an hour and a half.
I don't know if you saw Matt Hansen's Instagram afterwards, but Matt Hansen is a legit professional triathlete who ran a 110 at the race. He's from Iowa, and I don't know if you've been to Iowa. I know you're Canadian, but Iowa is also very cold.
Yeah.
And he said that the bike ride in Austin this year was the coldest he's ever been in his entire life, which I was like, if a dude who's a professional triathlete and pretty beastly and from Iowa says that that was the coldest he's ever been, like, I was like, it must have been pretty freaking cold.
It was cold. I'll admit that was actually cold.
I was miserable. It was the first time in a while where I'm like, I crossed the finish line, I got with all my friends, and I was like, let's go, let's get out of here, let's get some I want to get some pizza or something, because I don't even want to look at this race anymore.
So in the end, what was your time? I can't remember if you mentioned it.
424 was my finishing time.
So that's an awesome time. And
yeah, it did well.
Like that's incredible. People listening to that would be like, oh man, yeah, the real hard race. Let's bring it back to when you started triathlon, because you didn't start putting out fours and low fives hop, right?
No. And Austin was my first half Ironman. And I think it was my first half Ironman time was, I think, 6:35.
6:35.
Wow. Just shaved a couple hours off your time. No big deal.
Yeah. Just like a Lord of the Rings movie later, right? But I'm pretty sure it was 6:35. And it was a long day.
How'd you get into it?
Well, I was in college. I grew up playing everything. Both of my parents played college sports. And so I grew up doing everything. And then, you know, I go to college and gain some weight, like everybody does. And felt like, man, I need to get
very
back in
guilty.
Shape.
How much has gained weight for you?
Well, I don't know. Cause I hadn't really settled into like a normal weight yet. Cause I was so young, you know. But honestly, I was probably 30 pounds heavier than I should have been. And I was just like, I need to get back in shape. I need to find something that like interests me. And so a group of me and my college buddies were like, we should do a triathlon. We should just do like a sprint triathlon. So I bought like a crap bike on Craigslist. Didn't even ride it. Like, didn't do any training on the bike. I was just like, oh, I can ride a bike 12 miles. That's not anything. And it was like a 300-meter swim, a 12-mile bike, and a 5K. And I did it, and I was like, that was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. And like I said, it was like almost no training.
Do you remember your time? That, so that's a proper sprint.
Yeah, I mean, it was like, it was well over an hour. I mean, I would have to go back and look. It was in, people can go look. I think it was the 2009 Monster Sprint in Dallas, Texas. But
I'm going to get my fact checker.
Doing it right now. Yeah, looking
and
right now.
No triathlon Kim across the table looking at this.
It was not a fast time. But I saw the guys that were obviously good. And fit and fast, and you know, you see their bikes and you see just how smooth they are, and I was like, that is cool, and this is something that I think I can like wrap my mind around. And so I had that feeling of just like, you know what, I want to do this better than what I just did, because I grew up being good at sports and I felt like I just did terrible at whatever that was. And I would like to come back and do better. And so I kind of, you know, started working out and wasn't taking it super seriously, and started doing some sprints and did an Olympic. And that was awful too. Every time I stepped up a distance, it was just like I got annihilated by the distance.
Ben, I have to interrupt you. You're off the hook because they only have the results back to 2010 for that race.
Oh, no.
Yes. Sorry. Continue your story.
It could have been like a 2.5 hour. He could have been the guy with like the pylons that were picking up the cones in behind Ben. And he's like, I don't know, like maybe like a 120.
Yeah, it was not pretty. Like I was not looking at like my placing or anything. Like I was just like, well, that's over. It was just kind of the same story. Like I would start doing sprints and do a little better and do a little better. And, oh, crazy idea. Let's do an Olympic. And, oh, God, that was awful. That was, like, the worst race ever. I want to do that again, and I want to do it better. And then I would get better and better and better. And, oh, crazy idea. Let's do a half Ironman. And then, you know, I go, like, 6:35 or whatever it is at Austin. And I was like, that was awful. But I really want to do better than that. And so I would just kind of, you know, get that competitive juice flowing for different distances. And then, you know, when you start to get good at things, you start to like it a lot more. And so I start to enjoy it a lot more. And, you know, your network grows of who you're training with and socializing with, and, you know, you're talking about it more. And it just started to be something that I thought was really fun and really cool. And I'd watched the Ironman, you know, with my dad growing up, but it was never like, I'm going to do that someday.
When you were when you were getting better as that was going on and you're stepping up the distances, was that intentional or was that just because you were just racing more?
Both. I mean, I was racing and training more, but I was also like trying to do better because I'm just irrationally competitive with things when I really want to be good. And so I would just, honestly, I hate to sound like so simple, but I would just go online and be like, how to train to get better at a sprint, or how to train to get better at an Olympic, or how to train to become a better swimmer, or, you know, top 10 things that good swimmers do in workouts, or 1 hour trainer workouts that kick your butt. And, you know, I would just search different things and I would start collecting all this information. And I'm pretty good at motivating myself within workouts. And, I started to see different, you know, improvements and gains and getting faster and enjoying the sport more. And honestly, like it went from something that was like a 6:35 half to, you know, a lot faster than that.
Can you think back to one of the lessons that you learned back then that was a real turning point?
Yeah. I mean, the biggest lesson was if you don't train hard, you're not going to be good. I mean, that first half, you know, my dad was there and he flew out from California to, you know, help out, and he was all excited, but there was a part of me that's like, man, I just didn't train hard and I did bad. And I bet if I train harder, I'll do better. I just think that first one, I was just kind of winging it with no structure and just trying to do it. And I didn't really respect the process. And I think that was a big eye opener for me, because I think whether you're a 6:35 half person or you're trying to win a race, consistency is like the biggest thing. And I just had to really buckle down with, I'm going to work out every day. I don't have to do 5-hour workouts, but I need to be doing something every day. Mm. And when I started getting more consistent and keeping things really simple, I saw big improvement. And that includes with my diet too. I mean,
yeah, let's talk about that big improvement. You had 1 year that you made a real change, didn't you? Like,
yeah,
lost a bunch
yeah.
of weight, shaved off a ton of time. What was that year?
Yeah, I went, man, I think it was 2013. I did Austin and I did 5 hours, like 5:00:00. And which pissed me off.
I was going to say that. How'd that get under your skin?
And was probably the best thing for me, because all winter I was like, really, Ben? Like, you couldn't shave 1 second off to break 5 hours? And that's kind of like the last race of the season, you know, unless you're going to travel like around the world, which I wasn't going to do. And so that really motivated me, because I'm like, I'm better than that. Like, that is just sloppy and come on. And so I kind of buckled down that winter and I was like, I'm getting after my diet. I'm like taking my training to another level, and I am going to come back in, you know, spring of 2014. And I mean, I had the thoughts of like, I want people to be like, who is this dude? Cause he's not the same. And I was just like super hyper motivated that winter in the off season to make huge progress. And I did. And I shaved off like, I think I went, you know, 5 hours flat in Austin in October. And then I went, I think 4:24 in New Orleans in April.
Whoa.
And, I think it was 4:24, something like that. But I placed on the podium for the first time in my age group, and I qualified for Worlds. And I even had to like, whoa, that was awesome. And that did not feel like it used to feel.
What did you change, you know, in your training at that point?
And diet.
And diet, yeah. Honestly, the training, obviously I stepped up some volume on the bike. That was a big thing.
How much is a step up?
Yeah, I think the longest workouts I was doing before that off season was maybe like an hour and a half at like moderate pace. And I think, honestly, I just kind of had that moment of like, I'm sick of this. Like, I want to do good at this and I'm going to have to train harder. And I think I started doing like 2, 2.5, and 3 hour rides over the winter and really focusing. I had a power meter on my crank and I was like, I am not letting my power get below, you know, X today, ever. And I would just have like little goals like that during my workouts. And, you know, at first it was just like, I'm huffing and puffing and I can't breathe. And, you know, you start to see improvement and you're like, this is sweet. And I just came back that next spring and I felt like a different person. I didn't really focus a ton on my swim because my swim was already pretty decent. But I also worked really hard over that winter on my run, specifically on the treadmill, with the same, like, I am not letting my speed drop for 1 hour below, you know, 8 miles an hour.
Ooh, that's
I don't care.
That's an honest run.
Right. And so like, I would just start like, you know, putting goals out there for myself, like, you know, I'm not going to do this today, or I'm going to do this today. And it didn't always happen. It wasn't like, you know, every day was like success. I mean, I had days where I was like, well, that didn't happen. And that's okay. And those days were fine and helped motivate me. But honestly, that winter, I was just like, I don't know. I felt like Rocky in the training montage, where I was like, I am going to do this and I am going to do good in a race. I'm tired of getting beaten by people that I think I'm better than. And I just kind of had like a laser focus. I don't know. Like I just kind of got psycho there for a couple months.
Hey triathletes, slight pause here in the interview. We are healthy people who take care of ourselves. We eat right. So how does it feel knowing that you are paying basically the same for life insurance as a lot of the unhealthy people out there? Sucks, right? Well, that's why when Health IQ reached out to me to talk about supporting this podcast, being a former investment advisor, once I heard their story, I was so in for sharing it with you because Health IQ is an insurance company that provides as much as a 25% savings to triathletes, runners, swimmers, cyclists, vegans, etc. If you live a healthy lifestyle, odds are really good that they can get you savings on your life insurance. Health IQ actually just recently announced that they raised over $35 million in venture capital funding from Andreessen Horowitz. And these guys are big money hustlers in Silicon Valley. So they're making a lot of waves in just a few short years that they've been around. I like it. They're shaking it up, changing things, making it different. Now, if you want to learn more, go to the Trainiac's unique info page at healthiq.com/triathlonterran. Using that URL will get you to the triathlete specific info for Health IQ, and it'll help us out because it'll let Health IQ know that we and the Trainiac community is so awesome. Back to the interview. How did you manage all of this with, you're an age grouper, you're a teacher, you got a job, like the rest of us. And one of the questions that we get from everyone is how do I fit it all in? How do I fit in training every day? How do you do things in the morning? And one thing that actually turned me on to wanting to chat with you is a friend of yours messaged me and said, you know, Ben has a pretty buddy of mine, Ben, has a really unique approach to training. And he's just an age grouper and he's super fast. You should probably talk to him. And that was how this whole interview got going. Like, how did you manage all that? I hear you've got a pretty unique way of going about it.
Yeah. So, okay. So I have to like throw a disclaimer out there that like what I do works for some people, but it doesn't work for everybody. And so it's not like some like secret cure for everybody. But it just works for me. And, it works for people that are kind of like very motivated and can train alone a lot, because I know there's a lot of people out there that have a really hard time getting on a trainer for 3 hours or, you know, so forth. But for me, I swam twice a week and I was able to swim only twice a week, which I understand not everybody's able to just swim twice a week and still swim fast. So I get that. But specifically with the bike and run, I went from riding outside and a little bit of trainer to I'm just going to ride my trainer. And I'm sick of wasting time at, you know, traffic lights or people almost hitting me or people that I'm riding with talking too much. Like, I just felt like the way that everybody else was doing it was just such an epic waste of time. And it was so inefficient that I'm like, I can do this in less time if I just make every workout count, like every minute of every workout, like specifically for a reason. And so I just started structuring my workouts to where like every single minute of my workout is for something, like for a purpose. There's no dead time. There's no like, I'm just freewheeling, just spinning my legs out and waiting for motivation to come. Like, I just had this. When I'm working out, I'm going to go 100% and do it right and then be done with it. And it helped, you know, being on the trainer, because I didn't have to drive anywhere and waste time and set up and all that stuff. I could just hop on my trainer and go. And the same thing with the treadmill. I'm like, you know, I'm not going to do garbage workouts where I'm, you know, doing nothing for 20 minutes. Minutes and just kind of jogging. Like, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to have really focused workouts where I'm running with purpose. And so I just started kind of honestly making workouts up for myself that were kind of trial and error and that integrated different drills and integrated different skills that I thought would be important. And I had a lot of success with it. I don't know how to explain it better than that, but I just started working really hard.
What did a typical week look like for you?
So I would run every day, Monday through Friday. I would bike Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and sometimes on Saturday morning. And then I would swim Tuesday, Thursday.
So this is where it gets into the thing that I'm fascinated by.
Yeah. And so like
nothing on the weekends.
Thing. Well, I not nothing. I would do like an hour and a half ride, like on Saturday morning, you know, like watching a football game or something. But that was another thing that I was really upset about with triathlon is I'm like, I want to do this. And I think triathlon is so great, but God, it just like kills your weekend. And I feel like, you know, for the working person, like, I don't understand how people work all week and then work all weekend, like killing themselves doing, trying to do all this makeup training that they miss during the week. And so I just was like, I need time on the weekend to like decompress and not be stressed physically or with work. I just want to be able to like be around people I want to be around and not worry about work or triathlon. And so, yeah, like every Sunday, I cannot remember the last time I worked out on a Sunday. It's probably been like 9 years. And I just feel like, you know, everybody has their opinion, but I think one day off a week is a big deal. Like, I think recovery is so underestimated. And I think giving your body a chance to recover a week is huge.
So, like, let's put some parameters around this. You're running every day for what, half an hour to an hour? Just kind of ballpark it? Okay, half an hour to an hour.
I would say like, you know, obviously when I started doing this, it was less, maybe like half an hour. But in the last 5 years, I would say anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour. Yeah.
Okay. So you got, call it, 4.5 hours of running there and three bikes of what, hour and a half to 2 hours?
At least 2 hours. So like, I would say 2 hours.
2 hours? Okay.
2 hours.
So you got 6 hours there and then a couple swims.
Hour and a half ride on Saturday.
And an hour and a half ride. So 6.5. So we're talking, we got 12 hours.
7.5.
7.5. Yeah, we got 12 hours. And then how long would you swim for?
I would say an hour and 15 minutes twice a week.
So you're still doing about a 14 and a half hour week, just compressed into 5 days.
Right. And I was doing some strength work too. And I did have a gym at work so that, you know, when I had a lunch break or I had something, I could do some strength work. And so I had a leg day, a core day, and an upper body day. So that's probably another hour and a half of doing that stuff per week.
Okay.
Which I think is also really helpful too for injury prevention, but.
So here is a question. Do you have a family that you have to work around, or are you a single guy with all the time in the world?
Well, I don't have all the time in the world, but no, I don't have little kids or anything like that. And so that's another thing that I don't have to deal with, but I do have a real job. And that job keeps me very busy. I coach, like with my job, I coach cross country and track. Our cross country team has about 120 girls on it. And our track team has about the same amount of girls on it. And so I'm a busy guy. It's not like I'm, you know, one of these people that just, I train for a living.
Do you think that that compressed week might be something that only works for you because your body's able to handle absorb it. Yeah. Absorb it. And then
maybe
you got that, I don't know, like a 14 and a half hour week for most people spread over 7 days. Very reasonable. I'm wondering if that's too much volume over 5 days, but then you've got the couple of days to recover. I don't know. Had anyone else that this works for?
So I'm coaching one person, and it's somebody here in the Dallas area that is a mutual friend. He heard a podcast, not the one you heard, but a different one I did about, you know, how I train. And he's like, hey, I want to do what you do. And so I've been coaching him since August, and he's had a lot of success and is doing really well. And so his whole reasoning was, listen, I'm tired of missing time with my kids on the weekends. And I have more freedom during the week to get some stuff done. And so that was his reasoning, is he's like, I'm tired of, you know, wanting to, you know, train because I like triathlon, but then my kid has a soccer game and I just don't want to be in the middle of that kind of thing. So, you know, I know for a fact that it can work for people, but it's obviously not going to work for everybody, like I said.
Right. And even if it's not that exact, that 5 days on, 2 days off, where you're going hard in the week and then easier on the weekend, just the concept of loading up a few days. Like, we've got a friend here that's in our tri group that I think he's a coach. Like, he's one of our provincial coaches, and I think he does 4 really big days and 3 days almost entirely off. So that concept of just loading up heavy and then having really heavy recovery days.
Right. And another thing I do is I always make my like leg day, like when I'm doing some leg strength stuff, on Monday, like first day of the week. And so you have that soreness and you have that load in your legs through the week. And yeah, it sucks. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, that sounds awful. Why would you? This isn't a tip. This is torture. Right.
Well, I'm just saying, like, but it serves a purpose, because I'm telling you, like, when you don't do it, like when you taper for a race and you're used to really like loading up the legs heavy, and then all of a sudden there's not a load there, I'm telling you, man, you feel amazing. And you feel like, you know, you've got this weight that's not there all of a sudden, like a weight on a baseball bat when you're warming up. And then you take that weight off your baseball bat and you can swing that thing way faster because you're used to swinging it with a weight. And so that's what I compare it to, is, you know, you're training your body to do something that is not comfortable and not fun. And then when that is not there, man, I have found it's a lot easier to go fast.
And triathletes all around the world just picked up a squat rack.
Yeah. And that's the thing, like, you know, my time in the gym is not dinking around either. Like, I might have 30 minutes to spare and there is zero downtime. And I'm trying to get as much in as I can 30 minutes, because, you know, that next class of kids that I have to teach, like, they're going to show up at a certain time and I have to be there. And so it's not like I have all this free time during the workday. And so I guess it's a product of having a very rigid work schedule as far as like time during the day, because I'm on the same schedules as, you know, the school. Having that mentality of like, listen, I've got 2 hours. I'm going to get the highest quality workout done I can do in 2 hours, because after that, like, I'm done. And so I don't know. I know there's probably a lot of people that are going to be like, oh, he's got this or he's got that. But my argument is, you know what? Like, you can find ways to make your week way more efficient with your training, to where you don't have to like have no weekend, or, you know, if it's not the weekend, or you just want to like find ways, like, you don't have to ride for 5 hours to build up endurance to get faster for a half Ironman or even an Ironman. And so
let's talk about that. You qualified for Kona a few years ago, right?
I did Kona last year.
Talk about that first year doing that as a age grouper. What's that like?
Doing Kona?
Yeah.
Or qualifying. Well, Kona is crazy. I mean, God, man, I know you just got back from there, but it is just so hot. It's like you get off the plane and you feel like you're just starting to get drained of all the energy in your body. At least that's how I felt.
Oh yeah. You get off the plane and it's like, I don't know how I'm going to put on pants, let alone run.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's just like, it's just kind of silly. Like, you know, you go down in the energy lab and you run like for 2 minutes and you're already just like covered in sweat. And you're like, I have to do this for, you know, 9+ hours. And so it's just kind of absurd. Like, in Austin, for example, this year, like I didn't take any water at all on the bike. And I think in Kona, I probably took on like 2 or 3 gallons of water, and I still lost, I think, like 11 and a half pounds during the race.
Whoa.
Oh my God.
That's not healthy.
No, it's not. And, it just shows you like how intense nature is. I guess that was the big thing I walked away from Kona is like, man, like heat and wind is like, it can be like a real thing.
Oh yeah. When we were down there, we were talking to lots of people about the course itself.
Oh, it's boring.
It's probably a PB kind of course, but you throw that course onto Kona and all of a sudden it's a soul crushing magical course for like just dehumanizing people.
Yeah. Like if you put that course like in Mont Tremblant or something, like people would eat it up, but, it's just like, it just tears you up. It like turns you inside out. And, it's kind of cool because, you know, everybody there, and I'm sure you saw this, like everybody there in whatever age group they're in, everybody in that age group is within like 1 or 2% of fitness. No matter how they look, I mean, some people look just ridiculous and it's just kind of obscene, like how fit they look.
Oh God. But I run around there and like, I'm decently fit coming in like 157, 158, but I would run down Elite E Drive and I'm like, I'm out of shape.
Oh yeah. Like I went into that race, like the best shape of my life. And I had those feelings too of like, God, man, these people look just crazy. But in reality, like everybody's within like 1 or 2 percentage points of fitness. And I just think it comes down to who's really good at just suffering. And some people are just better at it. And man, that course just, it plays with you mentally and physically. And that run is just something else. It's just crazy.
Can you think back to putting yourself in the shoes of that day and summarize up what the race was like in a couple of words?
Yeah. Like the swim was my favorite part. I thought it was beautiful. I felt like I was in a movie. It was very physical for the first like half mile, but, it was just you had to kind of pinch yourself. Like it was just so beautiful being in the water and the setting. And then the bike, was fine for the first 20 miles. And then as soon as the wind hit me, I was just like, it's going to be a long, long day. And all expectations went out the window really quick. The bike was just kind of rough for the last 30 miles, just really, really hard. The run, I will say, was really cool because you get to see the pros going the other way and you start to really think like I'm at Kona. Like I am in the race right now.
This is a lead drive.
Yeah. Like you see the cameras and the helicopters and after the last 30 miles of the bike, which are just like so alone. But the run is probably the hardest mental thing I've ever done in my life. Like it was just like, it was unreal, especially once you get out of town onto the Queen K, like, it was just like a mental war. Every mile, it was crazy.
What'd you do to get through it?
I think you have to be really ready. I think you can do some mental prep of what am I going to think about? What are my mental thoughts going to be? Where am I going to go when it's really bad? And I think the thing that I always go back to is the people that really mean a lot to me. I started thinking about my family and my friends and training buddies and girls that I coach at school. And I start having those feelings like I did in Austin where I'm like, I am not walking and I am not quitting because, you know, Susie Q, who is 12 years old in Dallas, who's following me, whose coach is racing, is not going to have to say like her coach quit or her coach walked or, and so like, I have those thoughts of like, you know, those people that mean a lot to me and kind of not doing it for them, but like wanting to make them proud, make them you know, pumped about my result, because it does take a lot of people to get there. It can be a really selfish sport, but man, if you don't have a really deep supporting group in your life, like, I just don't know how it's possible to sustain yourself in triathlon.
Yeah. We all need excellent Sherpas. The last thing that I want to talk about is, I don't know if they were there the year that you were, but, Team Everyman Jack, you're on that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So they descended upon Kona this year and just dropped it like it was hot.
They were everywhere.
Those
hats were sweet.
Sweet hat. sweet really sunscreen.
Good, really good sunscreen. Listen,
good
I have to
walk?
Say this.
Like, this isn't an ad.
This is not an ad. They had their Everyman Jack tent up on Ali'i Drive, and we were staying at a condo just past where they had their little tent up, and every day they put out sunscreen samples.
And Kim would steal freebies.
No, there was no freebies there. no, but they would put the full-size bottles out with a piece of tape that said, not a sample, please leave here, just use. And people respected it, which I thought was cool. And every morning I'd go by and I'd put some sunscreen on as I went by and didn't get burnt, but I didn't. It went to the true test on the day of the race, when at 5 a.m. or whatever time we left the condo, I slapped on some of the sunscreen as I went by. Literally the end of the day, neither Taryn nor Mel wore that sunscreen. I did not have a hint of sunburn on me anywhere.
Oh, man.
I was stunned. They were both burnt to bits.
Okay, so the 30-second ad is over.
Sorry. But yeah, no, really, geez. I was super impressed.
The non-ad.
That's funny.
Okay, so here's my question. Number one, why is the team so good? Like, they were all over the 10 hours and under. Is that like a stipulation to being on the team? Do you want to just like explain what the team is?
Sure. I mean, it's my first year. I just finished my first year on the team, and I'll be back for next year, which I'm really excited about. But honestly, like, yes, there are some really, really fast guys on the team.
Yeah. What's his name from Barkley that did the fastest amateur run? Yeah.
He had the second fastest amateur run. He finished, I guess, the Barkley marathons. And yeah, I mean, honestly, man, like, it's a group of fast guys that are all really great people. And I know that's like an oxymoron in triathlon most of the time. but I'll tell you this, like, I went to the training camp that we have in Vegas end of February last year. And, you know, it was my first time there. And, you know, I just had like a really great Kona race and felt like, you know, I'm a pretty fast dude. I can hold my own. So two things really struck me. In that crowd, nobody is really fast because everybody's really fast. I felt very humbled because, you know, you get in a room with those guys and you're like, man, I'm just another dude. And the other thing was, I've never been around a group of really, really fast people in triathlon that were like that nice and great to be around. Like, it was so refreshing for me, because that is one of the stipulations that Rich has for everybody, among other things, is to not be a jerk. And I really respected that, and I was pumped about that when I was trying to get on the team, because it is possible to be fast and not be a jerk, which I think you and I both in Austin had interactions with some fast jerks, but
a little bit.
But you know what's cool? Sorry to interrupt you. I'm just going through the website as we're talking, and not only are these people not jerks, they're all brilliant. Turbo machinery engineer, dentist, data scientist, MD, pilot, healthcare consultant. Like, there's no dummies on this team either.
Yeah.
Let's
like
be honest.
Neurosurgeons and Johns Hopkins residents, and I'm like a teacher, and I'm like, I feel like low on the totem pole, because I'm not like cutting into people's brains and going like 9:30 in an Ironman. And so, I mean, the guys are great, and I know it sounds a little bit too good to be true, but honestly, like, everybody on the team is committed to not doping, not cheating, and just trying to do their best. And there are guys on the team, like, I want to make it clear, like, there are guys on the team that are not going, you know, under 10 hours in Ironmans. And so it's not like you have to like be able to, you know, go a certain speed in triathlon. Obviously that doesn't hurt, but
What's the whole mission of the team? Like, is it just something that the owner of every
smart,
man,
be nice and be fast.
Like, I'm just like, how did the owner of every man Jack started because he was a triathlete, right? So is this
right,
to like,
yeah,
to give,
I mean,
back, or is there a mission to spread a message?
At the end of the day, yeah, I think it's advertising for Everyman Jack, which is Rich Viola's company, who started the team. And he's a complete stud. I mean, he just got second in his age group in Kona. And obviously we're trying to get the brand out there, the name out there, because a lot of people are like, what's Everyman Jack, you know? And so we are trying to spread the word on that, but we are trying to also be just good ambassadors of the sport. We're trying to, you know, spread the word about how triathlon's great and how it can be really good for people to get into, but also trying to be good brand ambassadors for sponsors of the team. And we don't get paid to be on the team. It's not like it's some money maker for me.
Just all the body wash you can handle.
Exactly, right?
Well, I think mission accomplished on all of that, specifically at Kona. Like, you weren't there, but the crew was everywhere up and down Ali'i, and I thought it was this marketing stunt, and then all of a sudden we're at the finish line and I'm looking at your kits coming across in some fast times, and I'm going,
yeah,
this is for real. They were working the event and rocking the event. So,
yeah, we had guys fly to the event to just be there. But no, I mean, like the year I did Kona, I'm not going to lie, like during the race, every man Jack guy I saw, I'm like, I'm trying to get in front of those guys because they are good. And, you know, they're all good people and they're fast. And it's definitely a motivator for me being on the team to try to keep up with some of these guys.
I like it. Well, let's start wrapping it up here. I said we'd be about a half hour to 40 minutes, and I definitely pushed that here, Ben. You're spitting gold, man. What's next for you on the race calendar?
Well, nothing for now.
Good.
Kind of the off season begins, and I'm trying to shake all the rust that is on my body from Austin. But I did Buffalo Springs 70.3 last year. Or I guess this year, and I missed the overall win, like overall, by 18 seconds. And so I think I would like to go back there next year, not just to try to win, but I think just to do the race again. It was my first time there. And so I think I'd like to go back and give it a go again. I don't know if you heard the rumors of Austin getting moved to Waco next year.
I did hear that, yeah.
So I'm a little disappointed, but also interested in maybe taking part in that inaugural event next year if that happens. But no, I'm kind of sticking with the halves and some local events, and just trying to kind of keep the train going.
And where can people check you out, or check out Everyman Jack, or Mike's Electronics if they sponsor you? I don't know.
No, I mean, Everyman Jack, our team Everyman Jack is my sponsor, but no, it's just everymanjack.com is the website. And then on Instagram, people can reach out to me at Benjamin Fuquay.
Spell that?
Yeah, BenjaminFuqua on Instagram. So, if people want to ask questions or reach out or follow me, follow the team, look at the Everyman Jack stuff. That'd be great.
Sounds great. Thanks, Ben.
Thanks, Ben. This was
fun.
No problem.
Hey, Trainiacs, I hope you dug that interview. Just a few things before you take off and get onto your next podcast. First off, if you want to get just the best Triathlon Terran stuff filtered for you every week, go to triathlonterran.com/thehits. Enter your email address, and every week, instead of having to sift through all the bad stuff to get to the good, we'll send you out a weekly email with our most popular YouTube video from the previous week, Instagram posts, spotting a podcast, or even some of the favorite gear that I'm trying out. Could be a book, could be some tech, whatever. If you enter your email address, we'll make it easy for you. Get to your best stuff every week by going to triathlonterran.com/thehits.
And next, if you want to support the show at all, you can go to triathlonterran.com and take your pick from a few things we've got there that you can work into your day-to-day training. We've got coaching plans if you are looking for one. We've got our awesome-looking Trainiac gear. And if you click through the Amazon banner ad or click on any of the products that we mention or link to and you purchase anything at one of the affiliate sites like Amazon, it doesn't cost you anything extra, but we get a small commission. And of course, everything adds up and helps us a lot to keep this thing going.
And finally, if you want to get a shout out personally for your family members, Tri Club, whatever you want, leave a rating for us over on iTunes, good, bad, whatever. And in the next podcast, we'll shout out everyone who in the previous week gave us an iTunes podcast rating. That really helps us get discovered there. And if you want to give a shout out to anyone specifically, share the podcast with someone and CC me in at Taren, T-A-R-E-N, at triathlonterran.com and send us the message that you want to send to your loved one, friend, family member, most hated nemesis out on the tri course, whatever it is. The first shout out of today goes to Trainiac Troy Richie. Yeah, that sounds nice. Who shared the podcast and the YouTube channel with Bird.
Love Bird.
Yeah, Bird. Phenomenal pal.
phenomenal pal.
Pet. Who knows? suggested watching our early YouTube videos. Ooh, that's
not going to be a way to get anybody. That's strange.
Really question your judgment there, Troy. Troy says that he got into triathlons years ago, but still enters every single swim by doing a cannonball. Won't stop. Won't learn how to dive. Just wants
can't
to cannonball.
Stop, won't stop.
Don't blame you. Next shout out goes to Rich KP, who left us a rating on iTunes, I want to say. And he says it's great to see us switch over to podcasts as opposed to the YouTube videos. So I guess he's had enough of looking at me and I guess like more tolerable to not have to be face to face with Taren and the Speedos.
The damn great Speedos.
Thank you, Rich.
Next shout out goes to Anthony Epp from Vancouver, BC, fellow Canadian. Epster, Epi. I don't know, how would you shorten that name for a nickname?
I don't know. I can't stop thinking about how the guy hasn't seen sun in 10 years, probably.
Probably.
Mm-hmm.
Rains a lot in Vancouver. He says he's been catching up with the podcast and he loved the John Joseph interview that we did in Kona.
A lot of swears. Yeah. Highest swear to minute ratio of any podcast we've done or will do.
Or anybody, mm-hmm. Probably. Anyway, says that he enjoyed it. It was incredible, and it'll make your runs fly by, so listen to it. He got lost in it. Hopefully not on his run route. So.
Good. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's Vancouver. There's no sun to see your direction. So, sorry, Epster. Next shout-out goes to Trev, actually, from our training group, who says that he helps beat up on Taren every other morning in the pool, and it's great to see that it hasn't affected my confidence in these podcasts. Trev, I walk around in a Speedo every second day, unabashedly at 15% body fat, and it's going to take a lot more than you beating up on me to hurt my confidence. Sorry, buddy.
Have you seen his abs, though? Like, have you looked at yourself in a mirror side by side with him in the abs? Because that might take a bite out of you.
Trevor's abs?
Yeah.
You know what? Like, I don't think he's that attractive kind of dude. I don't see what women see in him. No.
And we finished today's shout-outs with Jeff Kuhn of the Honey Badger Racing Team. I initially thought Honey Boo Boo, but that's not the same thing.
No, she's an awful triathlete.
Clearly.
Yeah, swims like a French bulldog.
Oh, too far.
Jeff says that the podcast is very entertaining and informative. So nothing else.
You must be listening to a different podcast.
Yeah. Thank you, Jeff. And thank you to everyone for listening today.